Is this early June 2019 a watershed moment in the history of big technology companies? I'm David Brancaccio. The Justice Department and the Federal Trade Commission are reportedly divvying up who will investigate big tech companies like Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Apple. And there is confirmation that Congress has its own. Have these folks gotten too big? Questions. Yesterday, a House subcommittee announced it's starting a bipartisan antitrust investigation of its own. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is on the line. What's the congressional piece here?
Well, the subcommittee wants to be sure that there's enough competition among tech companies. It says it's going to look into whether existing laws are adequate to tackle what it calls abusive conduct from some tech giants, or whether we need new legislation to, quote, respond to this challenge. The subcommittee also says it'll investigate what it calls competition problems in digital markets.
Specifically, what could Congress do?
Well, it couldn't say break up Facebook. That's up to federal regulators. But Congress does make the laws, and current antitrust laws focus on whether companies are colluding to raise prices. But companies like Facebook don't charge their users, so the law might need to be changed. And as you mentioned, David, this is a bipartisan investigation. The subcommittee is led by a Democrat, but the ranking Republican member is on board.
How cooperative have tech companies been when it comes to legislative investigations like this, Nancy?
Well, Mark Zuckerberg has testified before Congress, and the CEOs of Google and some other big tech companies have also testified. But lawmakers in other countries say they've been ignored. There was a big international meeting of legislators in Canada, which Zuckerberg did not attend. He did send representatives, but members of the Canadian Parliament are so annoyed they could hold him in contempt of Parliament.
Nancy, thank you. Staying with tech, Apple says it's getting rid of iTunes in favor of three separate apps, one for music, one for TV video, and one for podcasts. Some of this is how clunky iTunes has become, like a combination bicycle pump and orange juice squeezer, too much in one place.
Now, I'm going to say up front that, like a lot of people, I am not at all sorry to see iTunes go.
My colleague Molly Wood, host of Marketplace Tech.
But this move from Apple makes a couple things really clear that I think actually have nothing to do with iTunes. One, Apple's focus is really on becoming an entertainment platform in a way that has nothing to do with, say, syncing music and movies from your computer to your phone. It's all about subscriptions now, which Apple gets a 30% cut from. As iPhone sales decline and Apple becomes more about getting this kind of regular recurring revenue from subscriptions and services, it actually makes sense that each of these areas of focus would get its own app, its own resources, and potentially really become its own business unit. That's important to Apple because it needs to maintain dominance as a delivery service. Right now, it's facing a lot of competition from Amazon when it comes to both music and video, Google for music downloads and TV and movie rentals. Spotify is in the podcast business now. All of this is really pushing Apple to up its game in these services, which is ultimately good news for consumers.
Marketplace Tech host Molly Wood from Northern California. Apple stock fell 1% yesterday with the antitrust talk. Google fell 6%, Amazon down 4.6%. But both stocks are up slightly in pre-market trading now. The NASDAQ down 1.6%. Monday is up 0.6% in futures trading now. The S&P future is up 0.5%. You know Marketplace is a source you trust for information about the economy and how it affects our lives. We're also a nonprofit news organization, and we're counting on listeners like you to support this kind of journalism. Any donation helps, but if you give $30 right now, it'll be matched dollar for dollar by another one of our generous supporters, the Candida Fund. Become a Marketplace investor today at marketplace.org, and thank you. 100 years ago today, after the long fight by suffragists, Congress passed the 19th Amendment. It would be more than a year later, 1920, before enough states ratified women's right to vote. A century later, let's talk about surprising parallels between then and now on the subject of money in politics. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams reports.
Suffrage anthems like Daughters of Freedom can bring to mind images of women in white marching for equality, of hunger strikes and sacrifice. Corinne McConaughey is a political science professor at George Washington University.
We don't tend to teach about the suffrage movement as a major well-funded organization in American political history, but it was.
The National Women's Party had hundreds of donors from all over the country. Joan Marie Johnson is author of Funding Feminism and says the group was
recording gifts from 25 cents, a dollar, all the way up to Mrs. Alva Vanderbilt Belmont's $76,000.
And when wealthy widow Miriam Leslie left $1 million estate to the cause in 1914, the suffragists did what interest groups in Washington do to this day. Hired a bunch of lobbyists to counter dismissive messages.
Hear the tramp of their feet as they come down the street. Gee, those girlies look sweet.
That's a 1913 recording of Your Mother's Gone Away to Join the Army, meant to mock the women. The suffrage lobbyists also kept notes on how to deal with powerful men in Washington.
Don't go see a senator right before lunch. He's too hungry and he's not going to pay attention to you. But also, don't close the door when you're in the office of a senator alone.
The movement published newspapers, created pro-suffrage silent films and cartoons.
They are running their own propaganda machine.
George Washington's McConaughey says the women were also careful to appear ladylike.
And in some sense have an understanding of being seen as too politically savvy might be bad for the cause.
Politics played out behind the scenes, too. The movement was funded mainly by wealthy, white women. Sarah Briner is with the Center for Responsive Politics, which tracks campaign finance.
So the wives of wealthy railroad tycoons and people who had access to power were the ones negotiating the discussions about who would be able to have access to power in a post-suffrage world.
Many of these women didn't push to end things like poll taxes or literacy tests, which continued to restrict voting for Black and poor women for decades to come. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Our producers are Victoria Craig, Michael Lipkin, Candace Manriquez-Wren, Daniel Shin, and Sasha Woodruff. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.